Jobs, inflation, and the virus. That's about the whole economy right now. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today. This one is the 16th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, I kind of feel, given the virus news, which is to say spiking, that I need to caveat the next, oh, I don't know, 6 weeks maybe in this economy with this observation. The virus is still in charge. It just is. And that's going to have an economic impact. Just look at Broadway and pro sports cancellations and universities shutting down. I'm not going to dwell on it, but we cannot ignore it either. All of that said, the backward-looking indicators in this economy look pretty good. First-time claims for jobless benefits last week, 206,000, well within the norm from the before times. And the four-week moving average, which smooths out weekly variations, is lower than it's been since 1969. So we sent Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman off today to learn the economic lessons of this rapidly improving labor market.
Let's go back to the Great Recession. Then, jobless claims didn't come back down to pre-recession levels for 5 years. Bankrate analyst Mark Hamrick says this time around, economists did expect jobless claims to fall back eventually, but
we didn't expect them to get back to the Beatles era levels.
Back in 1969, there were only half as many U.S. workers total, and this was playing on the radio.
You know.
It's also a big change from early in the pandemic when millions were getting laid off and claiming unemployment every week, which Hamrick says
did a great deal of damage to the notion and the reality of job security. Fast forward all these many months later, the storyline has almost been turned totally upside down. It is the employer mounting the mighty struggle, retaining and finding workers.
What we've got, says Robert Frick at Navy Federal Credit Union, is a flip in economic leverage from employers to employees.
People will quit on a hair trigger right now. So employers are really holding on to them like mad. So not only are we seeing layoffs go down, we're seeing wages go up.
Frick says the biggest risk going forward is another COVID surge, which could push layoffs back up again as each prior wave has. But for the moment, let's bask in some good news. Care of economist Julia Pollack at ZipRecruiter, which is a Marketplace underwriter.
Getting laid off or fired is one of the most stressful experiences, right up there with divorce and illness. So it should bring some good holiday cheer to know that the chance that you're going to be fired or laid off is unusually low right now.
And on that happy note, with just about 28 minutes before I head out on vacation, I am Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Have a nice time, Mitchell. Have a nice time. On Wall Street today, pretty much downhill from the jump. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. You ever get that feeling where you know you've seen something before and then all of a sudden you remember exactly where it was? Yeah, it happened to me the other day.
Oh, yeah. All right. Wow. This is like that scene in Raiders from the Lost Ark.
Yeah, this is
at
it.
The end.
Yeah.
A long, seemingly endless warehouse full of boxes and boxes and boxes. This is David Erlanger's warehouse. He's the president and CEO of Erlanger Distribution Center, and he's got nearly 200,000 square feet of warehouse space out here in Riverside, California, and they're chock-a-block full of stuff from, yes, the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach.
Tell me where we are. What am I looking at?
Okay, you're looking at merchandise that's come in. So a lot of it's going out. We're palletizing it and shipping it. And a lot of it, because of the problems at the harbor, is staying.
It's just staying here?
Well, we got in containers in November for Halloween goods.
Wait, say that again.
We got containers in November for Halloween goods. So it's going to end up staying here for a year.
In case you were waiting for some Halloween decorations this year, well, this is where they ended up, which is a convenient hook, I must say, for today's installment of our series, Temporarily Unavailable, How Stuff Moves Around the World or Stays Stuck in a Warehouse for a Year. Give me the logistics chain of events here. A container gets unloaded at the port. A drayage company picks it up, right? We did that story the
other
day.
Yep.
Takes it to the long-haulish trucking place, right? And then it winds up here somehow?
And then the drayage company brings it here.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, and we unload it, and we have within a four-day period to return it.
Right? You have 4 days to return the container.
We have 4 days to empty it and get it out of here. Now, I've got 14 containers here between here and the other warehouse that are empty that we're waiting for pickup.
Antonio and I talked about this last week at his drayage company back by the ports, if you remember that. Everybody waiting to move containers. In the before times, David Erlanger had maybe 2 empty containers waiting for pickup instead of the 14 he's got today. So what is all this stuff we're looking at? You don't even know. You don't care. It's just coming in and going.
It's coming in and going. Do I care? Of course I care. They're my customers. But I got to say
Noted.
Right, right. But what's in it? It's anything from dishes to luggage to umbrellas.
Stemless wine glasses?
Yep. This is all going to Dollar General.
Home Essentials and beyond?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just walk around here?
Oh, yeah, by all means.
All right.
Just watch for forklifts.
Is there a lot of yet another story that's going to get me killed. I got to do something else. There's a lot of stemless wine glasses moving around in this economy.
Oh, yeah.
God. Monogram mugs. Okay. Twin XL comforter set. That's you know, it's really funny. You get a good sense of the American economy coming to a place like this. Just the scale.
And we're really small potatoes.
No, really?
Well, when you think about it, we probably take in maybe 2,000 containers a year.
Yeah.
And there are 3,000 of them on one ship.
There are a lot of small companies in the giant global supply chain. David started working at the family business in 1984, bought it from his dad a decade ago. Now he's got anywhere from 40 to 60 employees. The number goes up around the holidays. They're unloading containers, maybe stuff for Dollar General or boxing them up for Amazon. Your customers or your clients, first of all, who are they?
Okay, our customers are importers.
Yeah.
Mainly those who do not have warehousing on the West Coast.
Are they looking for warehousing elsewhere, or are they just there?
Some may have warehouses on the East Coast.
Yeah.
We know some that have some in Texas and some, yeah.
And what do you hear from them? Are they complaining?
Oh, yeah. They're complaining.
Everybody's complaining. They're complaining to Antonio. They're complaining to you.
Well, you know, they want to make their numbers, too.
Yeah.
And they ordered goods, you know, 120 days ago, and it took 90 days to get going, and now they're sitting out in the harbor. In the meantime, they've paid for all those goods.
Right. And that's why my mom can't get her living room chairs low these 6 months, right? I mean, that's actually a true story. She ordered me for saying that.
I ordered some furniture in August, and they're going to deliver in January.
Huh.
So, yeah, we're all in that same boat.
It's actually not a bad time to be in the warehousing business right now. Erlanger's having a record year, even tried to buy a third warehouse. He was so busy.
We are going to do better. But it's also, I mean, look how cramped we are.
He's not kidding. They are packed to the rafters. Some aisles of this warehouse have pallets full of stuff physically blocking them because there is just not enough room. And that's a challenge. It's a challenge for you to be cramped because you just got to move stuff.
Because, you know, those little games where you have to move the numbers around? Yeah, that's what I feel like we do most of the time.
So is it just time? I mean, look, you're kind of at the center of this, right? You're the pivot point, right? Stuff comes in, stuff goes out. So you're kind of the pivot man, if you want to do the basketball analogy, mm-hmm. right? So if you don't know what's going to get us through this, what hope do the rest of us have?
Listen, time. That's all at this point. You know, they say a lot of it's COVID. So I just think time. But when it's all over, the prices will remain high.
Talk to me about that for a little bit, because I don't want to get into the whole transitory thing, right? We put that one to bed, but you don't think it's going to go away.
Well, we used to pay which may not mean a lot, $5 for a pallet. Yeah. Today we're paying between 12 and 20.
So if it's $5 for a pallet, you must have 10,000 wooden pallets in it.
Wait a second. And it was $5. It's now 12 to 20, depending upon the pallet.
For these wooden pallets over the place. Right.
And everything ships out. We ship out 3,000 to 5,000 pallets a month. That's a heck of an increase. And, of course, that gets passed on.
Yeah.
Right? So somebody's going to end up paying for it.
And that, of course, is going to be the consumer.
Exactly.
It ain't going to be.
Exactly. And then when things go back to normal, when do prices go down?
When indeed, I bet Jay Powell would like to know, too. David Erlanger has been in the warehouse business 40 years, never seen anything like this, he says, just like everybody else I've talked to for this series says as well. And just in case you are keeping track of how stuff moves around the world, or doesn't, as of yesterday, noon LA time, there were 102 ships in line to unload at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, up one from the day before. There were numbers out from the Census Bureau today about housing starts, to be just a tad more precise. New construction up 12% from the October update. And that caught us up short when we saw it this morning because, first of all, fall is not exactly what you would call peak construction season, right? But also because the building industry is still shorthanded, trying to find new workers and dealing with the supply chain to boot. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has more on that.
For months now, builders have bemoaned the materials that, because of supply chain slowdowns, they just can't get. It's enough to make you feel like Peter, Paul, and Mary in the 60s. For builder Jerry Conter in Savannah, Georgia, the problem isn't hammers, but windows.
We have a 28-week delay on the windows.
Can't finish a 250-unit apartment building without windows, he says.
We are getting to a stage and then we're at a standstill.
But Conter says contractors are getting creative and finding workarounds to move projects forward. And that's one reason housing starts may be up. Economist Ken Simonson is with the Associated General Contractors of America.
Construction employment has been increasing in spite of all those help wanted signs, and materials are eventually getting delivered.
So construction might take twice as long these days, but new projects are getting started. And Susan Wachter, professor of real estate at the Wharton School of University of Pennsylvania, says high housing starts have to do with strong buyer demand.
And there's a lack of existing homes for sale. So where is the buyer to go but to the new construction market? So that's the good news.
But she says the bad news is the added costs of shortages and delays are being passed on to home buyers. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Coming up,
no one regrets quitting.
Power to the people, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 29 points today, less than a 10%, closed at 35,897. The NASDAQ dropped 385 points, that's 2.4%, 15,180. The S&P 500 down 41, about 0.8%, 46.68. Bank stocks moved higher. Goldman Sachs added 1.9%. Wells Fargo grew 2.7%. Amanda Peacher was just telling us about higher housing starts, so let us look, shall we, at some home builders. D.R. Horton slipped 2.7% today. Toll Brothers rang down 2.4%. Lennar dropped more than 4% on this Thursday. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.42%. Jay Powell, Schmay Powell, am I right? You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. As Wall Street and American businesses try to get used to the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates someday, This morning, the Bank of England said, in essence, hold my beer, raising its benchmark interest rate 15 basis points. That is central bankers speak for 15 one-hundredths of a percentage point. So small, but really symbolic. The first major economy central bank to increase the cost of money, which gets me to the point, gradually. The American economy is indeed feeling some inflationary pain, but it ain't just us. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is on the global economy desk today.
When it comes to rising prices at the gas pump or grocery store,
we're not an island. We've got plenty of company.
Drew DeSilver at Pew has been researching global inflation during the pandemic. He says the majority of the 46 nations he's followed are experiencing it, and about a third of them have seen rates increase more than 2 percentage points. There are some common forces behind rising costs: global oil prices, pandemic supply chain problems, and the way the virus has changed spending habits. Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute says shutdowns have pushed people towards goods instead of services.
And that really exacerbated the supply-demand mismatch in that sector with the supply chain snarls.
The U.S. is third on the inflation list, under Brazil and Turkey, but they have unique political and economic climates. Adam Posen at the Peterson Institute for International Economics says for Americans, demand for goods is exceptionally high.
We tend to consume more and import more than most other even wealthy economies.
And by more, he means the most. He says the U.S. accounts for a quarter of global goods spending. Also, the U.S. had a unique pandemic labor market. For instance, when businesses shut down in 2020, many European countries largely subsidized payrolls. People kept their jobs. Posen says the U.S. paid for unemployment insurance.
So reopening the economy, that leads to more shortages of workers, more upwards push in wages, and more disruption.
Supply chain problems are starting to ease, says Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute. But there's one big global commonality that could threaten that: COVID variants.
And those aren't things that, you know, monetary policy hits too well. It's not too much even fiscal policy can hit.
So here's yet another story that ends with us telling you that the virus is still directing the economy. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Conventional wisdom about all those millions of people quitting their jobs every month in this pandemic economy is that they are moving on to something better. Better paying, better lifestyle, just better. But do they actually get that better that they are looking for? Heather Long is an economics correspondent for The Washington Post, also a regular on this program, and also just back from a visit to Arkansas reporting on exactly this topic. Heather, it's good to have you on, not on a Friday.
It's great to be back.
Tell me, would you, about this little place in Little Rock, Wonder House?
I know, it's a great name, Wonder House. It was a quirky European bistro in this town just north of Little Rock, and people loved it. But like many restaurants, it had a really hard time during the pandemic.
Well, say more, because I don't know your travel patterns, but I'm going to guess you don't swing down to Little Rock for dinner too often.
I wish I did more often. I met the owner of Wonder House in a phone call this past summer, and I could just hear the tension and desperation in his voice as he had just suffered through a kitchen walkout. So basically, the bulk of his employees, only 11 employees, 5 of them left, boom, 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 in a few week period in June and July. And so what we started to do was to follow all of these workers to figure out what happened to them.
Well, so answer your own question. Generally speaking, how are these people? I mean, this is the great resignation brought to life, right? Even though I hate that phrase for reasons I haven't really figured out yet. This is it in the flesh, really.
It really is. You know, I prefer to call it the great reassessment of work.
Yeah.
And I think what really struck me after following these workers for several months is no one regrets quitting. Everyone said their mental health is better, but the bulk of the people are not better off financially. And that was a really big revelation to me, because I think you and I, Kai, you know, we're talking to these economists, we're looking at this data, and it's portrayed as everyone is just leaving these hospitality jobs to walk across the street and make a few dollars more and really improve their lives. But that's really not the situation for a lot of low-wage workers.
So you took your recording equipment down to Little Rock and you got some tape. And I want to play a cut from Dylan Rodriguez, who used to work at Wonder House as a cook. Here's what he said about quitting.
I'm not saying it's necessarily even worked out for me, but I just know I feel better mentally, emotionally, and like creatively now that I'm at a place of where I can feel like I'm in control of my life again, you know?
So that's it. That's the whole thing right there, right? That last line, I feel like I'm in control of my life again. That's part of what's going on here.
It is. And that's why he doesn't regret quitting, even though he currently works at another restaurant in the same town and actually earns a few dollars less than he was at Wonder House. But I think it really speaks to a lot of people who are quitting hospitality are actually staying in restaurant or hotel jobs or retail jobs.
So look, you and I have been talking on Fridays for years now, so I know you to be a student of the broader economy. So what I want you to do now is extrapolate what you found at Wonder House, where mass resignation, right? I mean, you know, huge percentage of the workforce just quit. Extrapolate that to the rest of the economy, and where do you think this goes now as we're trying to figure out inflation and supply chain and the great work reassessment, all of those things? Where does this go?
I'd say the few takeaways that come right to mind are, you know, number one, I just don't see any way that the wage pressures abate anytime soon. It looks like 46 million people will end up quitting in 2021. And that's about over a quarter of the workforce turning over. And I think the second thing that we don't talk enough about is the pressure on small businesses. It's very hard for them to compete with the larger businesses on both raising the pay and on the supply chain issues.
Yeah, let me actually, sorry, I know I asked you to extrapolate, but let me throw in another piece of tape here from your story, which we should say, by the way, is going to be on Post Reports, the Washington Post's daily news podcast. There's a longer story coming, but here's Casey Forrester, right? One of the restaurant owners, and here's what she had to say about pressure on small businesses.
You know, you just don't accept the sandwich you've been fed for a long time after something like this happens.
So that's tough, right? That you don't even want to stay in the business when you're the business owner.
It is tough. And ultimately, I'm sorry to say, Wonder House did end up closing this fall. Yeah. The owners, they described it to me that it felt like they were a sandcastle and they had survived wave after wave after wave during this pandemic, you know, only to be grated over at the end of the day.
It's, you know what it is, actually? We don't know yet what this economy is going to look like on the other side of this pandemic, do we?
We still don't. And I think for me, the big hope is that finally some of these workers, particularly folks in the $15 and under category, could finally get ahead. And there is some of that going on. But I think about a young man named Jared Ives. He actually quit three jobs in the past year, one of which was Wonder House, which he quit thinking he could earn more elsewhere. And he did. But that job was so stressful that his fiance told him to quit. So it's this constant pressure of, yeah, you can earn more, but is that job really a better job?
Heather Long is the economics correspondent of the Washington Post. As I said, a longer version of this story, which you should tune in to hear, is going to be on Post Reports, the Post's daily news podcast. Heather, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, another indicator, not that we need it, that the virus is still in charge of this economy. I know I keep saying that, but I say it because it's true. Saw this in the Wall Street Journal this morning, that major music acts have been seeing no-show rates so far this year of as much as 20%. Normal no-show rates, 1% to 3%. And that number, by the by, is before Omicron and where we are now. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context, a lesson perhaps in why central bank independence matters. Maybe you've seen this, that the Turkish central bank actually cut interest rates today, which is surprising. nay, astonishing, because inflation in Turkey is, well, one word might be rampant. The Turkish lira has lost 40% of its value this year, 40%, as President Erdogan has been squeezing the central bank to cut. Why? Because he just doesn't like it, I guess. All right, we're out of here. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Diantha Parker are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.